You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Well, I got an email from a listener yesterday, which simply says, it quotes a verse out of the Bible and cites the verse. So I looked it up to ensure that, in fact, it was. I don't know the Bible like the back of my hand, as many people do. It says, just so you know, the answer is in the Bible. It says, I have often wondered why it is that the conservatives are called the right and the liberals are called the left. It says, go look at this verse in the Bible. It's, pardon my slaughter of the pronunciation here, Escalades 10:12. It says, quote, the heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. And it finishes by saying it's nice to have some official backing. It's interesting. You know, the Bible was originally written in Hebrew, then translated to Latin, and then from there, from Latin, it went to, I believe, German, then French, then English. And that was something that Gutenberg did. Gutenberg did it in German, and then he had to leave Germany for fear of the Pope sending his armed men in there to kill him. Same thing happened in France, and then in England, the King of England, who had his own church, let the Pope know, you know, you send any of your soldiers here, and we'll just kill them. They're not welcome here. You have no authority on our rock. So, interesting, however, that the different translations from the original Hebrew script, there are so many different ones. And if you look up just that one verse, you Google that, and you will find in 10 or 15, maybe 20, probably 15 to 20 different biblical translations, all in English, that different Bible producing companies, different companies that have published the Bible, will actually have the scripture written a little bit differently. One, it says, you know, in your right hand, the other in the left hand. One says the high road, or the right road, and then the other one says the wrong road. So this right, wrong, right, left, right hand, left hand, the same verse is interpreted so many different ways. And it makes it, to me, and again, I'm not somebody that goes to church on a regular, everyday, weekly basis. I just don't. But I gotta tell you, it's worth it to me to be somebody who really wants to know what the true poop really is in any subject. It makes me inclined to learn Hebrew and understand the Hebrew dialect from thousands of years ago when all the different verses and the different books and everything were written. And go back and read it in its original context to understand its original meaning. That's just something that I would be inclined to do. I'm not actually going to go do that, but that's something I would be inclined to do. Actually learn really what it's all about. But anyhow, I really appreciated that email. Of course, that is politically motivated to send that out, which is, you know, something that we are really going to be looking for. It's having a discussion with some folks that are friends of mine that are business owners locally here in a little town of Pahrump, Nevada, in which I live. And he was saying he's looking to sell off. He owns several businesses, and there's one he was looking to sell off. And he's speaking to a broker, and a broker said, you know, we'll know 60 days after the November election what the state of the economy is going to be in. And I told him, I said, I really doubt that. I believe that the Republicans are going to probably take control of the House again. And if they take control of the House, what's going to happen is you're going to have a lame duck session from November 2nd through about January 2nd or 3rd, when all the new people get sworn in. And in that lame duck session, Congress is going to push through every filthy, disgusting, stinking bill. They've probably already got them drafted or are in the process of drafting more, and they are going to slam them through Congress to pay back all of the donors and all of the people they owe favors to during that last two-month lame duck session. I told him, I said, it'll take a couple of months to actually get out of that funk and figure out if they're going to be able to repeal all of those different bills. So don't count on the 60 days, and my advice would be the same to you. We got plenty to come, guys. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. I am going to start with a listener email. It says, "Hi, Bill. Your show is great, and I have just a few questions." Well, starting off with, "Hi, Bill, your show is great," is a good way to grab my attention. He says, "I turned 21 this year and decided to obtain my handgun permit in New York." Well, good, because that's an aggressive thing to try to get. He says, "I finally received it about 2 months ago, so congratulations. And along with it, I picked up a Glock 19. Excellent choice in guns. Now, just so you understand, it is my belief as a longtime professional firearms instructor, I am one of a small handful of qualified five weapons defensive range masters in the world. That means able to run courses and teach people from the very beginning level all the way up through the advanced level on the following weapon systems: handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, and precision rifle. And for me, you can also throw in their M16, but that's kind of like the standard rifle, which would be like a battle rifle, a sport utility rifle, some sort of semi-automatic sort of urban rifle is what we're talking about there. M16 is just a burst fire the same. However, there are some techniques you need to make sure that you ensure to get it done right. And when it comes to defensive handguns, I truly believe that if you take all of the quality defensive handguns in the world, boil them all down, and pop out one at the end, the finest all-around, out-of-the-box, ready-to-go defensive handgun in the world today is the Glock Model 23, which is a mid-size gun that shoots a 40 caliber round, 40 Smith & Wesson. Now, the reason I believe this is there are no sharp edges on this gun. It is smooth. It is simple to operate. You can get, all you really need is a Glock 23, put some night sights on it, and you're done. That's all you need. You don't need any gunsmithing. You don't need to change out any parts. Matter of fact, I discourage people from changing out parts in Glocks. They're good to go as it is. There are two things that I like on a Glock one of them is a standard feature on some of the guns, and that is what's called the next generation slide stop lever, where it also works as a good slide release lever. Now, Gaston Glock has said that the lever that locks the slide to the rear is not designed to be used as a slide release, but a slide stop. Well, his engineers said, look, and the models 34 and 35, the tactical, practical, longer slide 9mm and 40 Smith & Wesson guns, these guys want to shoot these things with competition. They need to release the slide with that. So let's design another one that works the same but actually has a little ledge on it where you can release the slide. And through a lot of debate, Gaston Glock finally said okay. So I like to take that factory Glock piece off of those guns and put it onto the Glock 23. Another thing, Aerotech will actually make a magazine release button that actually cuts back into the frame a little bit. It's kind of a half moon. It's not extended. It doesn't poke out. You don't need an extended mag release. As a matter of fact, extended longer mag releases on a Glock are bad news because a lot of times in the holster pushes on the magazine release button. It releases the magazine while it's sitting there in the holster, so it can pop loose. You don't want that. I like mine. This one Aerotech does, it is pretty flush up against the frame, but it just cuts back, rounded, into the frame. You actually have to knock the frame out a little bit. There's a device that it comes with. Aerotech can do it, or you can buy the kit, whatever. Find somebody that does it. That's the only modification to a Glock that I have ever done that I really think is a bonus over and above the excellent design. Anyhow, the Glock Model 19 is the same as the Model 23, only it's in a 9mm. It's in a smaller caliber. So, anyhow, this listener has the 9mm version, which is still an excellent gun. That's the 40 caliber version, the Model 23, has 13 rounds in the magazine plus one in the chamber. Unless, of course, you live in a commie state where you have to have a legislatively mandated reduced capacity 10-round magazine. The Model 19, the 9mm version of the same frame gun, has 15 rounds of 9mm plus one more in the chamber. The reason I like these guns are they're large enough to carry as a regular duty gun if you have to carry a gun for a living, but they're small enough also to conceal. They're good enough to go into survival backpack, something like that. And with the 40 caliber, you can actually get some fairly hot rounds in there, and the gun will take the punishment. I wouldn't shoot nothing but hot rounds, but still, that's it's a good deal. So, continuing on, what he says is, I was wondering, as a new shooter, are there any types of practicing tips or drills I could learn to become more proficient? I would really like to take a defensive slash combat handgun course, but because of where I am located in New York, right on the border of Pennsylvania and New Jersey, I haven't come across any people or places that offer anything like that. I am a member of my local rod and gun club, so I have access to an indoor and outdoor handgun range, but I feel just showing up and putting 100, 200, 300 rounds down range at a single target isn't really going to benefit my skill level very much. Well, you're very intuitive. You're absolutely right. It won't. Also, I'm planning on hunting this year and had a question about covering up my scent. I purchased all of my camo this month, and I know it's important to mask yourself when you're out in the woods, whitetail, black bear, coyote, or what I'm concentrating on. It says, but I have no idea what extent. Should I wash all of the new camo? How? With what? How do I store it? I really have no clue. Thanks. All right, so let's address question number two first. Question number two is, what about getting everything to... This is Travis, by the way, Travis in New York. This really comes down to the point of knowing about masking scent and all the camo for hunting. And I will be straight up. I don't know. That is not my ball of wax. I am a defensive guy. I have gone hunting. I've done some hunting. I don't go out there and bag deer and pull tags and things such as that. I don't. I would love to. But it always seems to either be a matter of time available or money not being there. It's usually one or the other. So I, honest to God, don't know, Travis. But I'm sure many of the listeners out there would know. And if you do know, please call up and let us know what you need to do when it comes to masking scent with new camo and things like that. And let's get this discussion going on the air today. This is a great discussion for this time of year. So when it comes to the other question about drills with guns, first thing you need to do is you need to find somebody that is going to, that gives classes in your neck of the woods. And what I'm going to do is I will do some research and get back to you. And Travis, I will send you an email response with where to go when it comes to the any courses that are available out there. I know that there's a place that's going to be opening up in Virginia, but that's probably not till the first part of the year. We're going to try to find somebody in that area. I might even know some people in that area that could hook you up. So there is some information with that. You got to find somebody first who knows how to do the right proper types of drills. Once that happens, then you know what to practice and how to practice it. I do not recommend just picking up the gun, buying a bunch of ammo, going out to the range, and just start shooting. Because what you're going to do is develop habits. And they might be good, but most likely they're going to be bad. And to break a bad habit, once you start learning the proper way to do something, is monumentally more difficult, even at your young age of 21, monumentally more difficult than just starting doing the right thing. So you're young, you're energetic, you've got your CCW, you've got your Glock 19, you've got all the right pieces in place. So I will find someone in your area that you can go to and get some good proper training, proper tactical type of training. We're talking defensive use of firearms, okay? And, you know, hopefully we'll get some calls when it comes to the getting the whole scent-related thing. If you belong to a rod and gun club, I would imagine there's probably a lot of guys there that you can sit down and talk with and say, look, you know, I just got this camo stuff, blah, blah, blah. I want to go hunting. Black bear, you know, what was it? I think whitetail or blacktail deer and coyote. That coyote, I don't know that you need to have bunch of scent block. I don't really know. I really don't. I mean, whenever I've gone out coyote hunting, I've just used a 22-250, which is a long range round. Have a decoy going sometimes with sound, and I am downwind, and there's a lot of distance. So they would literally, the coyote would have to pass me en route to the decoy to know that I'm there. So, anyhow, that's the way I do it. But back east, it's, you don't have the big open areas that we have here out west. So you probably have to go with a different style, a different system. Also, one of the great resources that I have found when it comes to all kinds of stuff, and there are some good gun things there. There's some stuff to really be wary of. And that is, when it comes to gun and hunting related stuff. I mean, I found some great videos on how to break guns down, certain things on like maybe a trigger pack on a specific type of gun or something. All good information. So you might be able to find a little bit of reference there and then start talking with some of the guys at the gun, your rod and gun club, Travis. So there you go. I will try to do my most diligent effort in finding the right place for you to be able to go, the right person to go see, to get some quality defensive handgun training back east where you are without having to travel out west where there's a lot of it going on. So anyhow, there you go. Travis, I hope that helped answer a few things. Folks, stay tuned. There's plenty more to come after the break. You're tuned in live to 2A Radio. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, guys, and back to it from the listener email bag. We have, hi, Bill. I have the Saiga 12 semi-auto defense shotgun. I am trying to decide whether to get the 20-round drum made for it by Alliance Armament or to get some 10-round magazines made for it by AGP. Any recommendations? Also, I'm wondering if I should get any better sights. I think I've seen a front sight post that stands above the barrel beather, most like a post on a rifle. I don't remember if that requires a different rear sight or not. Might be good to have some kind of tritium sights on it. He says maybe a Surefire light mounted on it. How would you outfit it? This gun will shoot 3-inch magnum shells, but I haven't seen any buckshot loads shielding 3-inch magnum in bulk. It looks to me like Winchester offers some good high-velocity double-odd buckshot rounds and 2 3/4-inch shells that can be purchased by the case or 250-round lot. I think it's 1,300 feet per second or better. I don't have a clue what the best slug load would be for defense. Thanks, Sparky. Sparky, talk about a couple of things here. First of all, the magazines. I suggest whatever magazine works. Now, you're talking about the 20-round drum. Now, that's one magazine. You can't really carry a bunch of others. However, the 10-round magazines that you can get, provided these 10-round magazines are reliable, first and foremost, you can actually carry those in already made magazine pouches, even attack vests, things like that. So if you can carry 10-rounders in attack vests with other magazine pouches that you can get that are made for, say, AR style or AK style magazines, whatever the magazine would fit, like the pouch, whatever would cross over for the Saiga 10 round magazines. That's what I would buy. I might end up getting one of the drum just for kicks and giggles, but I would probably stick with the 10 round magazines that I could carry a bunch of and gear that is not, that doesn't have to be Saiga 12 special ordered. When it comes to the sights are utmost important, especially on a defensive shotgun. You really want to have some decent sights. What I would do is I would go to Brownells and I would look for something that was a ghost ring style sight. That is where you have the rear circle aperture and then a good solid front post. If you want to get tritium in there, tritium doesn't hurt a thing. Tritium is nice if you want to spend the dough on it. Just make sure you look to see how they're attached. I'm not so familiar with the Saiga 12 that I know how all of the sights will attach to the gun. I just am not. When it comes to the ammo, couple of things. First of all, a 12-gauge shotgun will do far more damage than is really necessary to a human being when it comes to using it for a defensive gun. 12-gauge shotgun is, pardon the pun, overkill. It really is. To go with a 3-inch Magnum double-aught buck is well more than you need. That's something that you would hunt like a large deer or even an elk with. A 3.5-inch Magnum is incredible. I'll give you the difference here. A 2.75-inch double-aught buck usually holds 8 or 9 pellets, 32 caliber steel pellets. A 3.5-inch holds 18. A 3-inch doesn't hold many more. You might still get 9. But what you're going to end up doing is having a whole lot more velocity. You don't need that. What you need is something that's going to pattern well. So when it comes to 12-gauge, what I highly recommend for defensive use are the 2.75-inch, what they call tactical loads, which are actually the lighter loads. You don't have to worry too much about over-penetration. Because quite honestly, if you're going to take a shot that's even several yards down the way, it's possible that some of these pellets are going to miss your intended target. You don't want them to keep going and going or blast through some sort of a sheetrock wall or something else and continue on down the road. Go through a window and keep going across the street. What you need is you need enough energy to get into the bad guy and drop him. But you don't want to have so much energy beyond that that it is a menace when you've got these other pellets screaming downrange. I do not recommend the very high velocity stuff for defensive use. I don't. 2.75-inch tactical loads. The Bernicke makes a great tactical load. But the thing is, you need to find these 2.75-inch loads, preferably the lower recoil or tactical loads, as they might call them. Either name is appropriate. Depends on what manufacturer they want to call it. And you want to get probably about, 50 rounds of each if you really want to do this right. At least 20 rounds of each. And you want to pattern them through your shotgun. Whichever has the most consistent pattern, go back and buy the same load. Make sure it is of the same lot number. Because if you shoot a whole bunch of stuff from one lot by one manufacturer, then you go get some stuff made that was a different manufacturing lot, you will probably have different results. When it comes to slugs, you're going to want to find the 5-round slug boxes and buy half a dozen or more different 5-round slug boxes. You're going to want to back up to about 50 yards, rest your gun or go prone to where it's incredibly stable, and you're going to want to pattern those too. And whatever gives you the best pattern, that's what you get. There is no one end all be all round for all shotguns. Every shotgun is different. Your Saiga 12 is going to have different results and like different ammo than your buddy's Saiga 12. It will digest something differently, completely different. You're just not going to see the same stuff. So there you go. I hope I answered your question there, Sparky. Folks, stay tuned. We're going to talk about the Eric Scott inquest after the break. You're tuned in right here live to Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back. Of course, we've been keeping you up to date on the Eric Scott Coroner's Inquest hearing in Las Vegas. It was expected to go several more days, maybe even stretch into another week. We had Jim Dunsing on the line yesterday speaking about that. Well, as it turns out, through some crazy turn of events, they stopped all testimony yesterday and sent it off to the jury. Now, this jury of seven, which only needs to actually have a, I guess it's 11. They need to have a majority, which I believe is six, of the 11, actually rule in any one manner or another. But in a surprise, they sent it off to the jury, and what was not too much of a surprise was the whole thing came back very quickly. And the coroner's inquest rule, they had one of three rulings that they could come out with. They could say that the shooting was justified, which means all is well, everything is good. Or they could call it excusable, meaning some mistakes were made, but we understand that those mistakes were made considering the position that you as the officers were in. Then there is the last one, which is criminal. There was criminal wrongdoing on behalf of the cops that were involved. So there was actually a news poll done by the local Fox affiliate, and 51% of the respondents said, and keep in mind, that's the same station that actually had the streaming, the live streaming video going on. So they asked what people thought about it, how they would rule, and the majority, 51%, said we would rule it criminal on behalf of the cops. 43% said justifiable. 6 said excusable. So it just kind of goes to show what the local people were thinking as they watched this thing unfold live on TV and streaming online. The entire thing was shown on television and also available on the internet. So what happened was they ruled it as justifiable, a justifiable shooting. The three cops that gunned down Eric Scott, completely up in the air whether or not he actually had he was actually bringing a gun in his holster out of his pants, or he was pulling a gun, or even he had ever even touched a gun. A lot of witnesses who were right there said that there was no gun. He had a BlackBerry in his hand, and that's what went flying. Some people said he pulled the gun out on the cops. Other people said he was pulling the gun inside the holster out to lay it on the ground. And of course, there were witnesses that said when they got to the body, when they got to Eric Scott, he was dead by the time that medical actually got there. When they got there, they said that the gun was in the holster in his pants. So all sorts of different testimony that went on. Of course, they got to the bottom of absolutely nothing, and they sent it to the jury with all the confusion. The jury said, okay, it's justifiable. Well, of course, Eric Scott's father knew that this was going to be the outcome. He knew the way that this went. He'd done his research. Of course, he had a press conference right afterwards. He said that the inquest process failed miserably, and he's absolutely right. Bill Scott, father of Eric Scott, told reporters that the next step for his family would be to file a lawsuit in federal court, quote, so finally we will all have the truth. The family plans to file a civil rights lawsuit alleging the officers used excessive force. Defendants will be Metro, Clark County, the Sheriff's Office, and Costco, where the July 10th shooting took place in Summerlin. Up to this point, the focus on the coroner's inquest has been on Metro, Bill Scott says. He says Metro pulled the trigger, but Costco was the primary guilty party. Costco killed Eric. Ross Goodman, the Scott family's attorney, said the lawsuit could be filed as early as 2 weeks from now. Goodman and Bill Scott talked to reporters outside the Regional Justice Center about 20 minutes after the seven-member Clark County Coroner's Inquest jury ruled the death of Eric Scott as a justifiable homicide. Bill Scott called the six-day inquest a horrific nightmare. He says, we gave the system a chance to work as it's supposed to work. They had the chance to present the truth. They also had the chance to present the facts at the coroner's inquest hearing. As we see it, the system failed miserably. And I couldn't agree with him more. It did fail miserably. The jury of seven announced the unanimous decision at 5:29 p.m. after deliberating for about, get this, 90 minutes. Jurors were instructed to determine whether the shooting was justifiable, excusable, or criminal. Coroner's juries do not have to be unanimous in reaching their verdict. Sheriff Doug Gillespie did not release any comment on the verdict Tuesday. A Metro spokesman said Gillespie would not be available until a press conference set for 10 o'clock today, which local time, that's about an hour and 21 minutes from now. Police responded to the Costco store after the dispatchers received the 911 call, blah, da, 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 da. I still don't know that the 911 call has even been released. I don't know if the 911 call was played in court yesterday. I tried to get a hold of our reporter, Jim Dunsing, today, to see if he could call in again and let us know how yesterday went. I have not been able to reach him this morning, and, so he might very well be busy doing several other things related to this. I just don't know, but we will find out. Scott carried a Ruger 380 semi-automatic handgun and a 45 caliber Kimber single action pistol, 45. The Kimber was found in its holster not far from where Scott's body landed after he was shot, meaning that the gun was in the holster, it didn't just come out. We know that. The Ruger was found in Scott's clothing as he was being taken to the hospital. Scott had a concealed carry permit and seven gun registrations in his wallet, but the permit didn't include the Ruger. We don't really care. That's a felony crime in Nevada, said somebody. Who cares? The permit did not list the 380 Kel-Tec, which is similar. Now, he had that gun registered, but not on there. Blah-da-da. Now, to carry a gun that is not on the permit, oh, that's a felony crime. That's a stupid deal. It's ridiculous. It doesn't really matter. That gun didn't even come into play when it comes to this. Okay, so we shot and killed a guy who had a gun in a holster, but they later found another gun on him. Evidently, they didn't search him until he was in the paramedics and did the search in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. And they found another. Oh, that wasn't on the permit. That's a felony. You already killed the guy. What are you going to do now? Charge him with a felony? You scumbags. Anyhow, with all of this being done and said, and this is just a filthy, filthy, disgusting way of going about any sort of semblance of wannabe justice in Clark County, Nevada. Of course, it came out exactly the way we expected it to. Well, one of the county commissioners by the name of Steve Sisolak is looking to see that they should make some changes in the inquest process, which is something that has been crowed about for years. Years we've known that this coroner's inquest is a sham. Well, less than 90 minutes after the coroner's jury ruled that the Eric Scott shooting was justified, Clark County Commissioner Steve Sisolak was offering ideas about how to make the inquest process more fair. Now, I'll give you my idea. It shouldn't be an inquest process. That should be done away with. And every officer involved shooting, whether someone lives or dies, makes no difference. If a cop uses deadly force and someone is injured, be it with a vehicle, be it with a gun, a taser, whatever, if it is someone gets injured in something that could have caused death or serious bodily injury, or it did cause death or serious bodily injury, it should go immediately to a grand jury. There shouldn't be an inquest process. Sisolak and Police Protective Association Executive Director Chris Collins appeared Tuesday night on a local program called Face to Face with John Ralston. John Ralston's a local reporter for the Las Vegas newspaper, to discuss possible changes to the coroner's inquest, which has been under scrutiny by Scott's family and other critics of the process, and has been for a long time. Sisolak presented a handful of proposed changes, some of which he referred to as more superficial than having all future inquests televised, or such as having all future inquests televised. Collins agreed with Sisolak, but some of the more substantial changes presented, such as having officers tested for drugs and alcohol immediately after the officer-involved shooting, were not agreeable with Collins. Now, Collins is the guy who's from the police union. Of course he's not agreeable with that. He should be, if he's a man and he knows what should be done. Everybody should be tested for that. Because you know something? If I, as a private citizen, get involved in a shooting and I've got to dump somebody with my gun, You know, if I've got to aerate some scumbag, some dirtbag, I've got to get drug and alcohol testing right afterwards. That's what happens. But cops don't? Now, that's a double standard that shouldn't exist. That exactly should happen. He says, I don't know how Metro or PPA, the Police Protective Association of the Union, would feel about it. I don't care how they feel. He says, but I think it's reasonable to drug and alcohol test the officers after a fatal shooting, says Selak. On the surface, it would seem reasonable. Give me a right reason why they wouldn't. Now, Sisolak said he was contacted by many people who asked why the officers were not tested. Collins did not agree that the measure should be implemented, saying that officers' contracts already call for drug tests in certain situations. Okay, well, now that's weak. One of the situations should be if you're involved in any sort of officer-involved homicide. Collins said there is a reasonable suspicions drug tests if a supervisor has reason to believe through an officer's actions that he may be using narcotics as well as random drug tests. Okay. Don't you think that the ultimate thing is if a cop has to shoot somebody and they die? That's the ultimate pinnacle of stuff going bad that day while you're on the job. And if there's ever a time where any cop should ever be tested for drug or alcohol, it should be after an officer-involved fatality. That's it. That's when it should be. If nothing else, get rid of all the other times and make sure that it happens then. Now, when asked what the harm would be in drug testing after the shooting, Collins said he didn't see much harm. He says, I'm unaware of any agency in the United States now that does that, because you never looked into it, unaware. That means nothing. He says, I have all the confidence in the world that our officers are not abusing drugs or narcotics in any way. Okay. You got 2,000 cops and you're sure that none of them are abusing drugs or narcotics or alcohol in any, you didn't say alcohol because you know there's a bunch of drunks on there. You're saying that none of them do drugs, any kind of narcotics in any way. Wow. You are a sham. You are perfect for that department. You are a total sham. Now, another proposed change is to change the wording of county code to make it a requirement for a family's attorney to submit a list of witnesses to be subpoenaed to the judge, effectively changing the code from may provide the judge with a list of witnesses to shall provide. He says, I don't think it's reasonable to not provide it at the inquest and then bring them out if we get to a civil trial later, Sisolak says. If you have some knowledge about this event, you should come forward at this time, not at a later time. Sisolak suggests that there may be no need for a verdict at the end of the inquest. The jury can find a police shooting justifiable, excusable, or criminal. We keep covering that. He says, this isn't a trial, it is a fact-finding, he says. Maybe we don't need to come up with justified, excused, or unjustified. Maybe we just gather the facts and let the DA make the call. Guys, it's not up to the DA. It should go to a grand jury. Earlier on the show, Clark County Commissioner Larry Brown announced his decision to run for mayor and agreed with the process that it needed to be looked at. More rhetoric, blah, blah, blah. He says, I think it's incumbent upon the Clark County Commission to take a look at the process, hear from those who are close to it, the DA, the sheriff, the police association, and get better perspective because there's nothing wrong with taking a look. Now, those are exactly the people to not go to, the DA, the sheriff, the police association. These are the three groups that have a vested interest in making sure that every cop that shoots and kills somebody or drives over somebody, whatever, kills a citizen. They're the ones that have the vested interest in making damn sure that they get off. That the cops get off. The DA works with the sheriff, works with the police association, works with the homicide investigators to do their very best to exonerate the cops that were involved. They are not the ones to go to ask their ideas. Anything that would otherwise make it more difficult on the cops and more scrutinous of the cops who did the killing is something that they're not going to want to see. Don't bother talking to them. You know what they're going to say. Duh. If you want to go through a coroner's inquest process, that's fine. Find the facts. Then send all of that information, All of it. That, you know what? That's the perfect solution. That's the perfect solution. Have the coroner's inquest. We don't need to have a jury of any kind. We don't need to have a jury of any kind whatsoever. Go through the inquest process to make yourself feel happy because you still have your precious little inquest. All of the information from the inquest, there will be no jury. There would be no sort of adjudication, justifiable, excusable, criminal, none of that. Go through the process. Involve the family of the deceased. Make it even. Then take all of that information and submit it to a grand jury. How fair could that possibly be? How much more fair could that possibly be, I should say? It couldn't be any more fair. Gather up all the information, have your little inquest, send all of those results to a grand jury. How about that? Now, of course, that's what a grand jury should be. So let's cut through the BS and forget about this stupid coroner's inquest. Everything goes to a grand jury. That's what it should be. And I swear, I hope that at the state level they change it, which would override this coroner's inquest process at the county level. It's stupid. Guys, stay tuned. More to come. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, I am incredibly critical of the Clark County Coroner's inquest process. I really am. The thing is, and I was a cop for that same department. I was a street cop back in the 90s for Las Vegas Metro. The coroner's inquest is for any and all law enforcement in Clark County. If you're Nevada Highway Patrol and you're involved in something where you kill a suspect in Clark County, then you're going to go to the inquest. Same thing with Henderson Police, Boulder City Police, North Las Vegas Police, Mesquite Police. Any state or local agency that's there. If it's a federal agency, then, you know, you're not part of that. You go to your federal process, whatever it is within your agency. But any local or county or state agency that's in Clark County when it happens, then you're gonna go. Now, I don't even live in Clark County anymore. I live probably about as the crow flies, maybe 2 or 3 miles from the Clark County border. I live in Nye County. But I'd say it's the injustice that drives me nuts. So I am not the type of person that can just stand idly by and say nothing or do nothing or just pretend that there isn't a problem. I just can't do that. It's the same thing. I am doing my best to try to fight for the gun rights of people in the state of Illinois. You know how many times I've been to Illinois in my life? Twice. Once is about, I don't know, 21 years ago. The next time was about, I don't know, 10 years ago. Right? I don't go to Illinois often. However, I do my best to draw attention to the rights of people being violated, how things, because of a screwed up government system, it needs to be fixed. This coroner's inquest process in Clark County is screwed up. There have been so many people who have been shot and killed by Las Vegas Metro Police, where if the exact same situation happened, say, in New York, where everything goes directly to the grand jury, a lot more cops would be in jail. For God's sake, they ruled it justified that a cop shot a suspect with a basketball. They have shot people with nothing in their hands. And they're ruled justified. Can you believe this? It is a horrible system, a horrible injustice, and essentially just becoming a cop in Clark County gives you a 00 status. You have a license to kill. Because that's what they're going to, especially with Las Vegas Metro. Because they investigate, not in finding the truth or what happened, they investigate to exonerate the cops involved. It is sickening, it is filthy, it's disgusting, and anybody else that lives in an area where that happens, I suggest you do your best to try and get that changed as well. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not-